When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey guys, welcome back to the No Bad Dogs podcast with me, Tom Davis, America's canine educator, the podcast where we love, live, and of course, work with dogs. Thank you guys first and foremost for listening to my podcast. I really appreciate it. Today we have an awesome podcast with Lynn Boeke. Lynn is a dog trainer slash psychologist, behavioralist, whatever you want to call him. Just an extraordinary amount of talent and information from Lynn. I really enjoyed sitting down and talking with him. This is the longest podcast I think I've had as a guest for sure, and I've taken more notes during this podcast than any other podcast I've done. Just a great conversation about dogs. We go everything from his beginning to working with Cesar Millan before the Dog Whisperer and working with that way back in the day, as well as information and advice to navigate young trainers and new trainers through how to get on course and what to do. And so this covers so many topics of his story as well as my story, and just a really great conversation with Lynn. And Lynn, I appreciate you coming on, and we're going to do this again, hopefully in person, but this is such a great, great podcast. And this podcast is brought to you by my friends over at Dogtra. Dogtra is the remote collars and e-collars that I trust and use for all my dogs, as well as my dog training. And you guys can find Dogtra at Dogtra.com, and you can search all of their remote collar products. And you can receive 10% off for the No Bad Dog listeners. And all you have to do is use the coupon code NBD10 at checkout and receive10% off your entire purchase on Dogtra.com. And here we go with Lynn right now.
I teach trainers mainly now. I do in-home interventions as well. I travel. I changed my business all around after many years of doing the dog psychology in-home and rehabilitations. Plus, I'm old, so you know the old bones need to slow down. So mainly I consult. I'll move in with people for 5 days and change their whole...
When you say move in, is that like, are you primarily, so you're traveling and you're consulting business owners, or are you consulting dog owners, or both?
Both. Anything dog related, whether it's, because I kind of was at the very front end of pack walking. And so I do pack walkers, facilities. I like to go in and look for, help people see the things that they can't see because they're in it. And then, of course, any dog trainer. Believe it or not, I brought in, I introduced the shadow program to the dog world. I was the first shadow program, call it that. But so now I have the shadow program where I travel to you and shadow the student in their own environment, around their consultations, their clients, their board and trains. So people could come to me. They used to come to me, and they will again. And they can see what I'm doing, but when I go there and I see what they're doing, it's a whole new angle on education. And so I do that. It's 5 days with Lynn, basically. So whatever you are, you don't even have to have a dog, and I'll come in and change your world and show you what you're missing. But when I move into homes, I say that first because ideally it would be best if I move in. Sometimes I can't. I can't move in with people because there's just no way. Sometimes they can't deal with me for that much time. Sometimes I can't deal with them for that much time.
Sure.
But 5 days, imagine. If I can, if not, it's a hotel down the road. But you're taking off work and we're working. So I used to do, if I had a facility again, I'd still do it. 30 days is my rehabilitation program. Time minimum 30 days, minimum 30 days. So imagine putting 30 days into five. So yeah,
that's intense.
But that's what's needed. It's literally my rule number nine, and everything in the world changes. You know, once that rule number nine is when something's new and different, everything becomes new and different until that thing becomes normal. And so when you come in and rock the world of the dog, the family, and you shake that little snow globe up, you gotta improvise, adapt, and overcome, you know, to live your new life that you want. And there's so much change that happens for the dog, and so much joy in the owner when they can see that anything, that the things that they thought were impossible are possible. And I've dealt with mostly the dogs that are worse the worst, and so I wish I could get the people before they hire their first trainer, but I usually get them after they get their sixth and fifth year of having the dog issues. So intervention is what that is, but it doesn't matter, intervention or prevention. It's the same process. One's just easier than the other.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it doesn't matter who you are.
Yeah, okay, cool. So okay. you're there to reformat, disconnect, to reconnect, and really just reset their life with either their dog training company or their dogs, but primarily dog trainers, right?
Well, right now it's starting to become kind of even, because I didn't open it up to dog owners for a while. This is a newish business for me, part of the business, traveling. It took me a couple of years to get my first travel gig. And so I've opened it up now to owners, because I think that's, they need that like in-depth, thing. And, the trainers, they need it too. They just don't want to believe it. So I'm not overwhelmed with a bunch of trainers, cause they're so used to the circuit of going to workshop, and I do workshops too, workshops and seminars. So eventually they will catch on that they need to have someone right there. I mean, it doesn't matter who you are, what level. Tyler Mudo is such a great guy, an intelligent guy. If you're in the dog world, you know who Tyler Mudo is. And he hired me for 5 days. And, you know, the first day or so, I'm like, well, why am I even here? You know, what the hell? You know, this is so smooth. But one of the simplest things that I helped him with was the dog exchange from the daycare to the owner, and the dogs that would get into a tussle at the gate because the employee was in a hurry to get the dog up to the owner so that the owner could get out. All public or, you know, service type stuff. You know, we got to make the customer happy. And no matter how much Tyler had worked with them at the gate, this continued to happen. And so I just watched the pattern, which is rule number eight. The pattern you set becomes the pattern you get.
How many rules do you have?
10.
Okay.
And you must not be following me right now.
No,
because I have the 10,
we're gonna
10
go
rule.
Over that.
It's okay. Oh, we're going to go over it?
Yeah, we'll go over it.
Okay, good. I got 10 rules. But there's always a pattern. And once you discover the pattern, then you can change it or reinforce it or refine it. But I simply showed him that they're worried about you being mad at them if they don't get the dog up there in time for the owner
to feel the staff
so that the owner feels comfortable picking up their dog and getting out in a timely fashion. As soon as I pointed that out, I said, you know, I started showing him some other things. You could just simply contact all your clients and let them know there's going to be an extra 5 minutes. We're just taking our time to ensure that your dog has, you know, reinforced these rules that we're establishing. So please be patient with us. Immediately he had his front desk email everybody, and everybody was like, oh, I love it.
Yeah.
And what I thought would be a couple of days before we started seeing results was almost instantaneous. Instantaneous. They had permission to do what everything that Tyler had taught them, you know. But so that's part of rule number six, by the way, which is emotional arousal and excitement lead to disregard. So no matter how, and these were great employees. They all had a great level of understanding of what Tyler, I mean, they had Tyler Mudo as their boss. I mean,
yeah, he's got
so,
a good staff over there.
They couldn't, the excitement or the emotional arousal of disappointing him or getting in trouble led them to disregard the information that they had learned. And all I did was help him give them permission sure. to take their time. And that it's just simple. Take your time.
Yeah.
We got off track.
No.
I don't know if you know much about me, but I have extreme ADHD.
It's all good.
So you'll have to keep me on track.
No, I love it. It's all good. That's what I think the beauty of podcasting is about. It's just, and that's why when you asked originally, Len, is like, what are we going to talk about? I really like to keep it open because I feel like if you have parameters and guidelines, it becomes scripted sometimes. And I don't like doing interviews on a podcast. I like having a conversation, so we can go all over. It's all good.
Oh, good. Good. But the great thing about me, especially with work, my ADHD is so dog related. Especially when I'm working with somebody and showing something with the dog, I'm explaining, I'm going into detail, and the dogs start doing something else. I stop there and I go into detail on what's happening now, and then something else happens. But I always make my way around to finish all of them.
Yeah,
it's a little much for people at times, but I love the all over the map too.
That's great.
So,
man. So where are you right now? Did you say you were in Arizona?
I'm in Arizona. I don't give my exact location anymore. I have some
Arizona
stalkers.
So, yeah, that's all good. So Arizona's so it's probably pretty warm there right now, huh?
Oh, it's beautiful. And you know what? I'm gonna tell you this right now. I don't come from a really good family type of life, and I live in an area where it's all families, and I'm not talking about just regular family. This, for whatever reason, everybody's got a minimum of 3 kids. I'm the only house that has just me living in it. And I've been here for a couple of years and I've seen all of the families out over the time. But with this COVID thing, I am overwhelmed with the families' interactions that are out there. I mean, it's supposed to be outside, but out here, it's so much more wide open. And it's funny because you see these families keeping their distance from other families. What it looks like to me is like a set of a movie. Like I'm going to go around the corner and I'm going to see somebody on a PA system saying, okay, all right, family with 3 blonde head kids, go. You know, it looks so surreal.
Yeah.
But for me, it's wonderful at 52 to see, because I never really had access. I mean, I have friends with families and
sure.
I love kids, but I've never had that much access to actual family love, you know. I mean, this last week I saw 3 different fathers, 3 different situations where a father was holding the bicycle for their son or daughter, and you could just see the kids fit, and you know they'd be at work normally.
Yeah.
And so what a wonderful time. I saw the silver-haired fox, you know, must have been an athlete in high school, college, and he was, you know, using great form with the baseball to his son. And that must have been rejuvenating for him, but I could see in that kid's face, like, I'm playing catch with my dad. And I'm at this age, I'm just overwhelmed that there's actually, you know, family love like that out there. It's amazing.
Yeah. I've been observing that too, with the COVID. I've like, wow, there's actually more dogs in my neighborhood than I realized. Cause I'm usually the only one out there walking my dogs, and to see all the other people out there walking their dogs, I think it's a silver lining, I think.
And I hope that we're cutting in and out, so I hope I'm not cutting you off.
Nope, you're good. You're good.
All right. I'm seeing, you know, all this happening, and I just really hope, and, you know, I'm not religious, but I guess I would pray if I were, that people can retain what's happening right now, you know? I mean, I look for zero pity from people, but I'm an open book about my life because that's the way I teach. And you don't really appreciate things until they're gone, right?
Yeah.
And since I've, you know, not had that much in my life, this is right now, this time, honestly, is like a piece of cake for me.
Yeah.
Oh, stay home, be away from everybody. Oh, go without food that's easy peasy for me. But these other people I know have not had such, you know, restrictions or reduced freedoms and things like that. And I really hope that at the end of this, people start to appreciate more what they have,
they
appreciate each other more. I really hope so.
Yeah.
Because I lack trust in humans. But this right now, I'm telling you first, and anybody listening, I already said I hadn't seen so much love in my life in the last 2 weeks. And I'm trusting, I hope that everybody can appreciate life after this much better, because we're going to thrive after this. I mean, we're shedding, shedding.
Yeah. I think so too. I agree with that. I've been thinking about that people are just taking a step back, and even myself included. I had to cancel so many trips, and I'm sitting there thinking, I can't believe I was going on that many trips this month. Like, am I crazy? And it just made me derail a little bit and take a step back. And I try to practice some sort of meditation and gratuity every day for me, just life in general. And it's extra now. There's a lot of extra things to be grateful for currently. But anyway,
oh my God, yeah. So much.
Okay. So right now you're COVID-19, once before and after this calms down, not currently, because right now nothing's really normal, but your career right now is coaching people. Are you doing any type of private training right now with dogs? Or are you just doing the in-house stays and things?
Well, ADHD and my other issues, I can't do a bunch of things at the same time. So I wanted to do this travel stuff when I was full steam with the School of Dog Psychology and my rehabilitation center, but I couldn't leave because everything was dependent on me. And so for whatever reason, I felt like I couldn't travel if I had that business. And so I moved to Arizona so that no one would know me here. I didn't develop a business here at all. I did it for a couple of reasons. One, because half the year's so hot, I feel guilty if I go in and tell people what they need to do with their dog, because they can't even get the dog outside. So I won't do that. That put me in a position so that I wouldn't develop a business. Because if I develop a business here, then I wouldn't travel. So I have to suffer and sacrifice, drop everything to begin something again. So I don't do anything but this travel. And of course, COVID really got me. So all my year canceled. I am dead in the water right now, dead in the water. And it's and you see a smile on my face. Like I said, this is a time where I thrive when everybody else is having the same problems. I can rise to help. And it's not going to be easy. The aftershocks once this is over.
Yeah,
everything is still canceled for the year, and I literally just started the business, and I got to a point, this was going to be my year to step into to comfort, and it all dropped off. And now I literally am like, you can see this. This is one of my buckets of coins. One of my tricks of the trade is to keep all change. And no matter if I give the cashier $1 or $2, and she says, do you have a penny? No, I'll take the 99 cents every time. And I put it in a bucket. This saved my life more than one time. And so right now I can,
you're good.
I got coins, baby. I got coins. I know how to survive.
Good, man.
But it's all good. We're going to come out on the top.
Yeah, I think so.
All of us.
Yeah, I think so too, man. I think it's, like you said, you put it in a good way. I think it's a shedding process. I think everybody's going to come out of this and just wake up and be a lot more grateful that they can go to the park and go to the store and go to the movies. And I think,
oh, the movies. Oh my God.
I know. I mean, it's been tough. I know.
Can't do anything.
Yeah. The movies is like one of those escapisms that is forever going to be a thing for, I think, everybody. You go into that theater and everything else just disappears.
Everything. Before I started dogs, I wanted to be an actor and a screenwriter, and I gave that all up for dogs. But so imagine I can't go into a theater.
Yeah.
One of my biggest things.
Yeah.
It's a lot of freedoms have been reduced. That's why I hope everybody appreciates things.
Yeah, and I think too. I think two people are starting to. I know I am for sure. starting to just get to know yourself a little bit better when you yeah, when you get out of sync, you know, because everybody has a routine for the most part, because it's what humans do, and dogs do it too. But once you get into a routine and then you completely derail it, you take a step back, and it's a lot of reflection process. And I've been growing myself mentally, to just get to know myself a little bit more in my age, and because I've been, you know, just like everybody else, it's just, you're so go in your 20s and 30s. And when you derail and you completely shut down, you're like, who am I? Like, where am I? What's going on? And it's been a good reflecting time for me.
For me, contradiction, contrast, or expectations, I call it displacing expectations. During those times, that's when you can find the truth.
Yeah.
The second I'm in a situation and something is contradictive, or there's a contrast, or something's expectations displaced, that's the moment where you can latch on to the current truth. And right now, trying to find out our current truth about ourselves is really a good idea.
Yeah, that's what I've been doing, man. I don't have to get up and, you know, I mean, I'm doing my onlines and podcasts and stuff, but I don't have that, you know, boom, 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 boom. And it just makes me, it grounds me. And I'm taking the glass half full on that. I think a lot of people are feeling suffocated and contained, which is human, I think.
Especially in the more densely populated areas, yeah. You know, where it's like 60 floors of apartments.
Yeah.
You know, I can't imagine.
Yeah, I don't know how I would do in that environment, because I'm in upstate.
Oh, me either.
I'm in upstate New York, so there's like 60 cases in our entire 200,000 community county. So there's really not a lot of the disease, thankfully, spreading here. Not that it can't, but we're not in New York City. So that's what you're doing. Things are obviously on pause because of COVID, unfortunately. So how did you?
Well, did you say they're on hold? Is that what you said?
Yeah, your travel and
well,
stuff.
The travel is on hold. Yeah. But while I'm here, I get to do other things that I've wanted to do. I'm plotting and planning video courses and an online subscription-based library of footage that I didn't have time to do a lot of. And so now I'm organizing that. So when that's going to be done when I get out, that's one of the things that I hadn't been able to do.
Yeah.
So there's always something you can do. Yeah, things are on hold on the other thing. And I love I love traveling. I love moving in with people and learning about them and helping them.
Yeah, that's it. That's a great business concept. I've never heard of anything like that. That's really interesting. I'm sure that gets pretty sticky sometimes, and
it does.
Yeah.
And if you know me, I make it sticky first. I need the whole snow globe to be upside down, not just the snow blower. I want everything upside down right when I get there. And that's that's what I do, is I make everybody know. They know before I arrive what I'm going to do and how I'm going to do it, why I'm going to do it, when I'm going to do it, what they're going to do and how they're going to feel when I do it. And then they're going to say that I didn't tell them that, and then I'm going to explain it to them again. Because you got to have it over and over and over again.
Sure.
The whole point is to just disrupt everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's fun. It can be fun. And there are times when I don't want to leave this family. I don't want to leave.
Sure. Yeah, you get connected.
This is great. Yeah, oh man.
So what's been your path? How did you get involved with dogs? What triggered, what sparked? I know you said that you wanted to get into some of your pre-existing passions were acting and movie type stuff, which is cool, screenplay. How did you make the switch to jump into? Because you seem like a very innate person with what you're doing. It kind of came to you. You didn't really go to it type thing. That's the vibe I'm getting with you. You're very innate with what you're doing. You're passionate the way that you're talking about it and everything, which is great. You're not the type of person that said, I want to be a dog trainer today and look up online how to do it. How did you get into it?
And that's dangerous, by the way. We'll talk about that if you want later.
Sure.
But how did I do it? I, you know, innate is a good, polite word. Trauma might be a better word. I don't have that family thing. And so my first dog I got when I got out of the Marine Corps, and then I got a girlfriend, and then we got a dog together, and then of course we broke up, and the dog went with me, both of them, and then the dog died in front of me. Now this dog meant the world. It was really going to be her dog, but she knew that that dog was mine. And you know, I'm a dreamer, and one of the things that I would dream about with this dog, her name was Ginger, was cruising across the United States, you know, having Thanksgiving at Plymouth Rock and going and checking out the what's it called with the presidents and on the mountain. I just wanted to cruise around with this dog everywhere. And of course I was in LA at the time. I wanted to be, you know, very successful. My dreams were based on this success. So we were going to travel once I'm successful. But then one day she died in front of me, at not even 4 years old. And, that killed me because it was the first time I ever experienced the same amount of love returned that I put out.
Yeah.
You know? And, I know that's what do they call it? Anthropomorphizing, but I don't give a shit. You know, that's what it was. I would wake up to, this, you hear that?
The tail.
My eyes would slowly start opening, and I'd see her face. She's laying on the pillow, right facing me. How long was she watching me sleep? You know, just time to wake up, daddy. This is the best thing that ever happened to me. And she died right in front of me. And it changed everything in my life. Everything.
Yeah.
At that moment.
What ended up happening to her?
A couple of weeks, the only thing I can, through my patterns, you know, of looking at things, the only thing I could think of, this is the sweetest pie on the shelf. And one day, now I was doing a lot of partying at the time, so this is where guilt and shame starts collecting in with, connected to the death. But I was cruising down Sunset with her one morning after, you know, a good 3 day, you know.
Bender?
Whatever you want to call it, candy flipping. Whatever, you know.
Sure.
And it was morning, and I was like, you know what? It's time to get real serious here and start doing what we came here for. And there's this hotel it's called the W, not the W, the Standard. I think it was the Standard. It was being built at the time on Sunset Boulevard, and I'm just hearing birds chirp, talking about my time to get serious stuff in my head with my dogs. And out of the corner of my eye comes the biggest pit bull I've ever seen cruising through the parking lot and attacks Ginger. And now I'm a fight animal, and I've been up for 3 days.
Was the dog off leash?
So I'm like, off leash, yeah. So it turns out it was the whoever's running the construction, the foreman's dog. And Ginger was never the same after that. Never the same after that. And this is before I worked with dogs. Never the same after that. Couldn't get her to, didn't want to go outside. When she did get outside, she was dragging all the, I don't want to be here. And each time that happened, I kept getting, I made daily returns to that hotel to try and fight the the owner. Stupid stuff. Anyway, it was only like a week, less than 2 weeks, and then she just flipped. Like, front of her body went this way, the back of her body went that way. I'm like, what are you doing, silly girl? And then I watched her chest go. She had a heart attack. So,
man, that sucks. I'm sorry to hear that. That's pretty traumatic. Actually, I can relate to that a lot. Actually, I have a very, very, very similar story in how I started working with dogs. And my parents divorced at an early age. My mom worked full time. I had a brother and a sister, and the only thing I had at home was dogs. So I cooked and cleaned. I mean, I did it all. I was sufficient for my family at a, you know, it was fifth, sixth grade. And anyway, when I finally was old enough to move out, I was kind of like kicked in and out of my house. I have a good relationship with both my parents now, but you know, back then things were different. Humans change and evolve and mature. But I was kicked in and out of my house from the time I was 16 till I was 18, and I got a dog the moment I got my own apartment, and I got a Saint Bernard, and his name was Saint. And I purchased him. I saved all my money for like a year. I was cooking. I was a fry guy. I was just frying, you know, French fries, mott sticks, shit like that. And I saved all my money. I spent $1,500 on this purebred Saint Bernard. I will never forget the moment I decided to get a Saint Bernard. I saw this person driving. I remember where I was, who I was with, everything. I remember exactly where I was. I saw this big old head sticking outside of a car. And I was like, holy crap, that's the most magnificent animal I've ever seen. So anyway, so after that, I saved my money, moved out of my house. But before I moved, well, actually, let me rewind. Before I moved out, I got the dog, and then I was kicked out. So I moved.
Because you can't.
Right.
My like two of you live in there now.
My mom said, I'm not going to have a dog that has to back out of a room to get out. I said, okay, fair enough. So I finally got this dog. You know, me and my relationship with my mom at the time was not that great. You know, fighting back and forth, trying to take care of my sister, so on and so forth, my younger sister. And I finally got the dog. I moved out, and I worked all the time to support that apartment that I'm in, and as well as feeding the puppies.
Because he ate more than you.
Right. So he turned about 6 months, and he was my everything. I mean, he was my whole world, literally. I mean, when you're, what was I, 18? When you're 18 years old and you move out and you get your dog and it's just you and him, and all I did was work and come home and hang out with him. And I've always had pictures, and I've always been a dog person, always, always, always. We have pictures of me before I could walk playing with dogs and stuff. And so it's always been a part of my life, especially when I was left at home when my parents split. And so I remember bringing him to my friend's house to show my friend's kid's siblings, so his younger siblings. I said, hey, you guys got to come see my dog. And I remember I pulled in, and his name is Saint, and he came up next to me on my thing, and he was too big. He was six month old-ish Saint Bernard, so he was still big, but not a full Saint. So he couldn't sit up front, so I pushed him in the back. And I remember him trying to get up like it was yesterday, much like you can probably remember your incident. And I pushed him.
Slow motion.
Yeah, man. And I pushed him back. Right. And I remember just pushing him back. I'm like, get out of here. And then I went inside and I said, hey, come see my new puppy. They're like, oh, okay, cool. And I come out and I open the door, and he's on his back with his tongue hanging out of his mouth.
Oh,
and his gums were flipped up and they were purple. Mm. And I'm like, and I immediately panicked. I'm like, holy shit. I'm like, oh my God. And I, you know, just like anybody else, just pure. I mean, this was my everything. I mean, it was literally my
everything.
Whole life. It changed my whole life when I got the dog. And then when this happened, I picked him up and I put him on the ground, and my friend's dad came out, and he's like, what is he doing? I was like, he's dead. And everyone's looking at me like, what? And the kid starts crying because they can see he's not bleeding, but he's blue. He's all blue. He's not breathing. I'm like, what do I do? And long story short, man, it was tough. It was really tough. So I grabbed him. I threw him in the Jeep that I was in, and my buddy got shotgun, and I went about 100 to the emergency vet and brought him in. And dude, it was, so anyway, so when you said that story, that's pretty much exactly how I got into dogs too, is that moment forever changed me. And I made the decision after that because I felt guilty. I felt ashamed. I felt like it was my fault. You know, the whole nine. And from that moment on, when I was 19, 20 years old, I'm like, I'm going to devote my, I don't know what it's going to be, but I'm going to devote my everything I can to dogs. And then after that, I started at 20, I started my dog walking business. And so anyway, I can relate to that, traumatic, thing, man. It was, dude, it was, it, but same thing. It just flipped the script, and you know,
everything.
Yeah. And to some point, you know, going back, the light at the end of the tunnel, and I think the silver lining with this, and I don't know about you, but for me, I was like, you know, why did this happen? How could this happen? This was my everything. This was everything in my life. I don't understand how it was taken from me. I don't, you know, it's whatever. And then slowly but surely over the years, I realized once I started getting into like this very serendipitous career of working with animals and getting goosebumps and getting excited and chills and just really helping people. I was like, you know what? Maybe that happened to move me into this direction. I don't know. But anyway, so very relatable to that.
Well, if somebody's got some sort of plan to move me into this direction, well, fuck you, because that sucked.
Sucked.
You know, I moved in. It's complete. You know, we just talked about everything going on with COVID and appreciating things until they're gone. And, you know, I was out. I was out all the time. I was going to make my way into the movie business through the party scene, and I wasn't doing too bad. I was doing pretty good at the time, and that was my fault. She died. I said, that's my fault.
That sucks.
And, that was the first massive depression level I hit. I moved. I was a party guy. I had roommates. I literally moved in one day, three blocks away. I mean, I moved my fridge down, pushed it down the street, moved into a place that basically just blotted out the world. And I stopped answering my phone. I became a different person at that point. And one of the things that I want to help people through is grief, because, you know, if you're not understanding how it works and all the things that go along with that process, you could, and if you're alone, you go down really deep, really deep. And it's important to understand the processes of things so that you don't. Anyway.
Yeah. No. Yeah. 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 That's important.
Let's get off of this sad shit.
So after that, so you're in LA. You know, your dog passed.
After she died, and I was in my guilt-ridden thing. I mean, I had a job that things were happening to me that were strange. You know, I was working for P.F. Chang's China Bistro. I worked for them for almost a decade, opened up, but I basically doing the same thing I'm doing with dogs, but with P.F. Chang's, just cruising around, opening restaurants and teaching. And I never had to write anything down. And I really loved the stress of the busy nights. And you'd see me moving in slow motion while everybody else was, bah! And I would have a table tell me, where's our food? And I'm like, let me go check on that. And I didn't even ring it in, you know? I had to start writing things. Things were changing. So I actually got fired from P.F. Chang's China Bistro, who I put a lot of effort into and helped them. But I was going through some, I was going through some hard stuff. So I started walking dogs for people who I felt were like me, who didn't have time to do anything with their dogs.
And what age were you around when you started that dog walking?
Let's see. Jeez, I guess maybe
just so I can have a.
It was 1997, whatever that is.
Okay,
1997. I'm 52 now. I'm numbers. I'm just trying. I got out of the Marine Corps and then I moved up to LA. I guess I was 29, maybe 28, 29, somewhere around there.
Sure.
And I didn't know. I didn't even know that there was a business that you could do that. And I wasn't treating it like a business, of course. I was just doing it for next to nothing. But my day got pretty full. And so then I had to actually start charging. And I was doing individual dog walks. And I was like, I reached a max. I'm like, I need to do something else. So I said, I'm going to take a bunch of them to the dog park. Well, like I told you earlier, I can't do one business and do the other one. None of those people wanted their dogs to go to the dog park. So I had to start a whole new business. And so I ended up building a business where I'd take 10, 15 dogs to the dog park. I called it dog parking. And it turned out other people were doing that too. And this is Brentwood, California. I would go into there. And I would do 2 and 3 groups a day. I got so full. And I'm never satisfied with where I am, I guess. So the next thing was, I want to do this outside of the park. So basically, it was like a pack walking, but I wasn't doing it very well. And then I got into dog psychology. And so then I started doing it really well. And I knew I had something that I could do that was beneficial, because while I was dog parking, the way I got most of my business was, hey, man, I got this dog. this doesn't really fit with my other group. It's such a pain in the ass. I'll take it. Hey, sure. I heard you took Steve's that Rottweiler. I'll take it. You don't you want to know about it? Nah, I'll take it. I took everybody's misfit, and we had the most balanced group in there. And it turned out that whenever there would be fights, I was the one that broke them all up. And after a while, dog people were following me and my pack, and then dog walkers were having their pack and following me because they knew it would be safe. It was really weird. But then I moved on to dog psychology and started doing the consultations, rehabilitation, my pack.
Okay, so you're in Brentwood and you're dog walking several packs and other people are taking notice to the misfits of the packs that you're taking
in. Oh, yeah.
Cool.
And so I started taking them out on trails. And this is where things got interesting because, you know, I had troublemakers. Now that we're talking about maybe high school troublemakers, not hood troublemakers. I found out, and we can talk about it later, I found out there's a completely different type of aggression. Dog park aggression is not aggression, let me tell you. Because when I started working with that, holy shit. But it doesn't matter if you've got 15 high school dog park type aggressions at once, that it can still be a brawl. But I found out quickly.
Sorry, go ahead. What do you mean by that? Like, you mean the dogs aren't really that serious about fighting, but they are malicious?
They argue.
Yeah, okay.
They argue. And now there can be blood drawn and everything. And every now and then at a dog park, somebody brings in a dog that actually
serious about it.
Becomes aggressive. So it's for me, I have a whole thing. Play is really just a ritualized sparring. And sparring is a ritualized fighting, and fighting is ritualized, structure and killing. And killing is necessary for protecting the pack and feeding, eating. And so, where does the play? If you got two, I never let more than two dogs play at the same time because it always ends up being an issue. But if you've got just the two playing, and one is being playful, and the other one's being competitive, that could be a problem. If one is competitive and the other one doesn't want to play at all, he could become combative, and that competitive comes straight up to combative immediately. And so, you know, I always see people's dogs playing, and I'm like, that dog is not having fun.
Yeah.
Well, he's playing. No, he's running away and running back, yes, but he's trying to get them to go away. You know, that's not the same thing, two different levels of play. Mm-hmm. So anyway, same thing with two levels of fighting, you know, or commitment and experience. And of course, genetics or drive and
100%.
Things like that come into play. But when I did get into the full on rehabilitation where I actually had the aggressive, the serial cat killers and the professional flesh removers, and I had them all off leash walking on trail, that was
impressive. Yeah,
well, thank you for that, but it was it's a razor's wire when you got a dog come running at your pack from who wants to play, but you've got an army, you know, 300, you know, the Spartans.
Yeah.
You know, you got to be real careful.
Yeah.
If your dogs aren't listening to you, they're going to listen to the one who can't handle the temptation and goes.
Yeah.
So it can be dangerous.
Yeah.
So I got off track. I apologize.
No, that's okay, man. Don't apologize. It's all good. I love hearing these different nuances and avenues of different things. It's really refreshing to me. It's great. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
So we were just talking about the packs, and then so where was the next step for you with the dog walking business from the packs to?
The next step was, and there was a period of time I tried to do some obedience training, and that's didn't work out for me because it wasn't. I'll be over 12 weeks in a row and I'll spend an hour with you, hour and a half, and show you what to do. Now, next week I come back, show me what you did last week. They had a little trouble. You help them up at the end, you give them the second week's work. You come back third week, show me what you did last week. Well, we didn't really have time. And I didn't remember what you said. And so how can you continue to teach if they haven't done the first two levels? And so it was happening again and again. So I said, screw this. And so I started what I guess would be like the first, I was doing an outpatient board and train, basically. Mm-hmm. I'll come over Monday through Friday. I'll go work the dog. On Friday, you'll come out with me, and then I'll show you what I did, and you'll do it over the weekend. And then I'll do that for a little bit. And that made it better for me because I was doing the work. They weren't.
And that was that was just doing obedience, right?
Was, yes, but it still didn't have the effect that I thought about. You know, this was before, I mean, I guess online was kind of just starting, you know, but I'm not technically inclined. So I tried to Google, you know, behavior and all of that. And all it took me to was obedience. And I'm like, that's not working right now. That's not stopping this behavior, obedience, because that's what they call a sit is a behavior, or
yep.
They, what you got going on over there?
Moving. I just moved my station.
They call a dolphin doing a flip behavior.
Right.
So it didn't really work out. It didn't pan out for me. So I started the dog psychology thing. And when you were talking about intuitive and whatever, that's where things for me started to happen quickly, because I was basically feral as a child. And, you know, my only affection as the kid came from cats. And my dad killed them as fast as I could bring them in, and I'd have 20 of them
Shit.
At a time. And neighborhood dogs, you know, I developed, this is another shocker, maybe not believe it, but I introduced pressure and release to the dog world in like 2005, I think. But I was doing it with my clients, and I had started learning that when I was a kid, and I didn't even know it, because you'd see these dogs wrapped around their pole or their tree
yeah.
after school,
yeah.
and they're like 2 inches from the tree trying to get away. They don't understand opposition or reflex. I didn't understand. Every day I kept coming. I'm like, why? Are you stupid? Just do it. Go back around. And so I have martial arts and wrestling, and so I was developing this pressure and release. Now it got kind of out of hand and got and it's I say that shadow program and that introducing the pressure and release, not with pride, more shame and regret and guilt, because I everything that I'm upset about with the new trainers I did, I too fast, too soon. Hey, kitty, too soon, too fast.
So
what's his name?
His name is Pip. He's a
Pip.
Yeah, I actually adopted him at one of my dog walking clients. The dog I was watching, similar, like very interesting how the similar kind of getting into the industry. I did all the dog walking to the dogs that didn't go to daycare because they were aggressive or whatever, or just didn't fit in daycare. And anyway, so the house that I got my cat Pip that you just saw on the screen, for those of you who listen, my cat always tries to jump in my face when I'm talking, of course. And I was watching this dog, and I remember one night it was a English
setter.
Yes, thank you. And the setter was out.
How did I know English setter? Wow, that's weird.
Yeah, it was a setter. Ta-da. Yeah, and he just had extreme prey drive. I mean, a bird dog. I mean, just very prey driven, and just hated other animals other than his own pack. And I remember one night he was just standing there, just like almost on point, but sitting like, hey, I did something. And I went out and he killed a cat, and he was all tigered, like tiger cat. And I was so pissed because I'm the type of person that, like, the other day I was leaf blowing and I sucked a worm out of its hole and I took it and I rehomed it over. I'm that person. Like I just, yeah. I just love animals.
You'll live better over here.
Yeah. I can't, like, even last night.
Or you're out walking the dog and you see it's early morning, the sun's coming out and you see those brave worms that
yes.
tried to make it across the sidewalk, but
I'm
then things
guy.
Started to dry out, you know?
Yeah,
and so you
I'm
put
that
them
guy.
Into the moisture.
I'm that guy. Even last night, my girlfriend saw like one of those little centipedes in our room, and, you know, because it's starting to get warm here, so things are starting to move, and she's freaking out, and she's like, you know, so I just picked it up with a paper towel and brought it out all the way outside, and You know, anyway, I'm that guy. So anyway, killed the cat. And then the next day, I'm walking around the corner. She was an exec for GE, so she was in like China or something. And I'm in her house watching her dogs, and I walk around the corner, and I see this little tiny fluff on the front porch. And so it sure enough, you know, it is probably his dad that he killed. And so I took him in, and that's him.
Oh, lucky cat.
Yeah, so now he's a dog. He thinks he's a dog because he lives – I mean, he rules the whole roost, all of it. I mean, with all the three dogs, for sure.
Hey, you guys see? Of course, now Cleo wants to go be social with everybody. Hey, you see that I'm online here, right? Thank you.
So, okay, so let's rescale a little bit. So you're doing the dog and the pack walks. And then what was your next step? Did you just start getting straight into training, or was it a hybrid?
Well, I started doing the consultations, and working with homes. I don't want to get into a whole big thing here, but my mentor was Cesar Millan. And so I met him before he had his shows, and I was working with, you know, first of all, he didn't want to teach me. I had to stalk him. Nobody stalked me. I literally had to stalk. There were times he's like, "What are you doing here? Go away. What are you doing here? Come on in." Didn't know what to do. But I, timing wise, I was there when before the show, and then while the show was starting, and then they told him he couldn't do consultations and rehabilitations unless it was for the show. And literally just happened to be there when they told him that. He says, "Start referring to Lynn." And he had a year waiting list. So I was doing 4 consultations a day. That was where my real college began. Wow. That's where I learned immediately that there's a difference between dog park aggression and aggression. And with my very first dog from there. But so everything that went into the Dog Psychology Center for the first 3 years of the show came to me. And that was a blessing that happened, because I had to learn right now. I had to learn more than I had been watching from Cesar. I had to get in there. And so I got bit a lot, but some of that was probably on purpose, because I didn't care about myself very much back then. Punishment was necessary, and there's a great deal of punishment after the bite. That, you know, you got to clean it, you got to stretch it, and you got to heal, and it was a whole thing. But now I have I don't know if you've seen any of my videos, but there's just no fear about what's going to happen now. Because I know what can happen, what could happen, what I can do, what it can do. Knowing what the dog can't do is probably the most important aspect. Because they don't know. And when they don't know, that's to your advantage. Anyway.
Yeah.
So
I like it.
So then I started having people driving from all over the United States to me. Some people brought their dog from New Jersey, down from Oregon, Washington, from Texas, Minnesota, or Michigan, all over, just would come over for like just a 2-hour consultation. Like, wow.
That's great.
Obviously, it's before all of this technology stuff. So,
yeah.
So my pack got to really do some great work, and I had big learning experiences for me there. Having the first facility, losing the first facility, having the second facility, losing the second facility.
Yeah.
A business is not my forte.
Yeah, and it's usually, and you know that's the case for I think for many people who are. Excellent. I think it's a contrast thing. I think, you know, if you're really, really good with animals, the likelihood of you wanting and digesting technology advancements is less likely because all of your eggs are, you know, it's the same thing with artists. I tell people all the time that, you know, if you have a really, really good musician, they may, if they're really good at something, they're probably going to lack, it's contrast, I think.
Absolutely. Yeah. But if you're great at something, you can be great at something else.
Yeah, I think so.
Because you've already mastered one thing. It's all about desire at that point. And I never had a desire for business that goes along with the self-punishment stuff too. So, and that's a deeper subject. The business end of it
Yeah.
Anyway, there are people out there that are amazing at business, but they're not any good with dogs,
yeah.
But they are successful. And there are people who are amazing with dogs and not successful,
yeah,
because they don't do the, it's trying to find that yeah. balance in between. And so I've taken the last couple of years to learn technology. My motto is learn, practice, master, begin again. I don't know if you know that. And so my first venture into technology was my podcast, just so I could learn how to get comfortable. And if you listen to that, you hear all this learning curve, this whole yeah. thing. By the end of that, I just bookended. I only did 14 episodes with that. And I learned it, practiced it, mastered it, then moved on to doing a podcast with somebody else. Unfortunately, that didn't work out because of the distance and everything. But I loved that. Unfortunately, that podcast, The Canine Exchange, didn't continue. I loved it, though, because it was more geared towards dog owners.
Did you have a co-host, or did somebody help you produce
yeah.
it?
Yeah. Okay. I had a co-host, and he did all of the technology stuff at that point. So while that was happening, I didn't have to focus on the technology for the podcast. I was focusing then, a begin again, on how to edit videos. Because if you look, I only have like 9 videos up where I'm working with dogs. And so I had to learn the editing, because I don't want to just do what a lot of people are doing. There's too much out there, if you understand what I mean. Like,
I do.
If we just put all that's out there, but then took half of what they're putting out there and threw it away, it'd be better. It's just too much, and it's out of order. It's out of, you know,
yep.
I want to put something, I want it to be so organized. That's why I'm eventually going to be looking for some sort of a angel investor, somebody who knows how to do all this stuff, because I want to organize the stuff. Like your stuff is great because you're doing the consultations. You're just doing basically what I did as a shadow program. You're just following, watching. But if I'm going to go and learn something specific, I got to dig through, you know, and find it. And yours is better, way better than the ones that are damaging that have a lot of followers, because you got to listen to them talk about themselves for an hour and a half, and then they get 5 minutes of this, and that wasn't even what I wanted.
Thank you.
So I want to put something in order. And by the way, I like the way you do yours a lot.
Thank
because
you.
you're not hiding, but you also have the ability to do the thing. It's the people who don't have the ability that are either hiding and cutting and removing, or they don't have the ability and they don't know they don't have the ability, and they're just putting it out there. And when you got 60,000 people looking at something that I believe is very dangerous to show somebody, and maybe not even appropriate for that dog, you get 60,000 people looking at that and taking their interpretation of that and doing their version of that. That's a lot of dogs.
Yeah.
That's a lot of aftershocks.
Yeah, scary.
So I'm real careful about what I put out, and I've actually decided that I'll still put stuff up that I'm having fun with, but the technology, the social media, everybody goes, you got to put stuff out to get people. I'm not getting the people with my stuff. So I'm going to build my stuff that's going to be for sale.
Yeah. Yeah.
Instead of giving away everything for free in hopes that I can sell something, either I'm not getting it that way. So yeah. I'm just going to build my stuff. And I'm very patient in this regard now, you know,
that's good.
I've already been out for a while. And
yeah.
Anyway, I don't know if I'm answering your question.
No, there's no question. I love it, man. I appreciate you saying that a lot. Thank you very much. So you followed Caesar around and watched what he was doing, and he kind of shooed you off, and then right place, right time, he gave you all of his references when he started Dog Whisperer, right?
Yeah. Well, after the first season, because he was still doing work on the side. After the first season, they said no more, and I happened to be there that day. And you know, at first you're like, he says, start referring to Lynn. I'm like, this is cool. But after a while, I realized what it was like, you know, I don't like these pants anymore. Do you want them? Because I'm going to get rid of them. If you want them, you can have them. I'll take them.
Yeah.
It was an experience for me because I was doing four a day, 7 days a week, and I never had anybody cancel. And I was booked out 4 to 6 months.
Damn.
And this is before, you know, all now everybody's a dog whisperer.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's when I then started my first I started the first shadow program at that point. And I called it shadow program for a reason. You know, I was in an elite unit in the Marine Corps, and I really wanted to create an elite unit of people like me and, you know, even Caesar, so that, and have them spread out around the world so that they'd start impacting dogs.
Ah, yeah.
And that was the goal and everything. And unfortunately, I didn't realize that some people had different motives, and they'd come through my course and then they'd go and start their own course and hadn't you know, learned how to do the stuff yet. And, that's dangerous.
Yep.
And it's caused the bubble's about to burst on that. And I think maybe right now this COVID might help it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's happened to me a lot. You know, and I think, you know, I would think, you know, you're probably similar in the aspect of, you know, when I get people that want to come in and learn, see, and that's a good thing about, you know, for me, I forget to charge people, you know, for all sorts of different stuff. I'm like, oh yeah, by the way, and luckily, you know, my girlfriend became my manager of the entire business, and my personal manager. And so anyway, so, you know, she always tells me, you know, you got to be really careful because I've been burned so many times because I just want to help. They're you know, people are like, hey, I'm running this big operation and I'd like to come and work. And you're like, yeah, man, absolutely. Sure. Or yeah, girl or whatever. And you get burned pretty quick because they suck out everything they want. And
everything.
And then they leave you
and claim it as their own too.
Yeah. Rebrand it. And it sucks. Cause you know, I'm, you know, similar to yourself, you got into the industry to help dogs. Ultimately, you didn't get into the industry to build, you know, this big franchise thing. You really just wanted to help, and it's hard when you get burned because you're like you said, like very maybe transparent about everything, like, hey, this is everything you do and you want to help. And yeah, so that's a big thing in the dog training industry for sure.
There's a lot of plagiarism going on in there. Nobody can do anything about it online, even if it's not with dogs. You see people put a quote up and then you see the quote somewhere else done a different way. It's just like there's no—
Sure, it's hard.
I won't get so far off. Here's my biggest problem, and I love the fact that we as an industry can have the freedom to not have to go through a course and register and sign and by law and all that. We have the freedom to do that, but that's also where it gets really dangerous.
Yeah.
The freedom, anybody can do it. I love my dog. I'm going to work with dogs, you know. I mean, that's how I did it. I started, for crying out loud. But it's just, I don't know where I was going. I don't want to be negative. I've learned to accept, and acceptance is a really critical thing that anybody, the earlier you can learn acceptance, the better. Because without acceptance, you're just suffering. So an early acceptance leads to an early end of suffering. So I just have learned to accept that people are going to do what they're going to do. I just have to be more careful. And I was free with a lot of my stuff. Yeah. And I gave away a lot of stuff, to rescues, and they just take advantage. And a lot of it's because, they're suffering too. They're desperate. And so they take. So I learned who and what to work with and what not to work with. And, mistakes. That's what I teach anyway, is everything I teach is based off of my mistakes.
Yeah. That's what life's about, I think, is, you know, reformatting. Okay. That sucked. How can I learn from this? So I don't do it again, or hopefully not do it again. And maybe teach somebody else not to do it again.
Well, mistakes are very, very critical. I don't like the word failure because it's kind of final.
Right.
But, errors, mistakes, setbacks. You know why you are able to have sushi, right? Why you're able to have rare steak and cook chicken properly and cook catfish, because somebody said, I'm going to try this catfish the way I ate that salmon. Oh my God, I got worms. This pork and this chicken, that's got to be cooked through somebody and our ancestors. Mm-hmm. They did all the hard stuff for us, and so
yeah,
we should be thanking them a great deal.
And I think that there's also advantages to people's mistakes too, not only learning what not to do, but what to do.
Absolutely.
I'm from like Saratoga Springs area in upstate New York, and they're famous for creating the first potato chip. And long story short, this guy came in, I forget what year it was, but he said he wanted his potato extra crispy, and it came out not as crispy, and he sent it back, and the chef was so pissed off, he just cut it into little tiny pieces and fried it and gave it to him at a crisp, and he loved them, and now we have potato chips.
And you see that disregard, that disrespect to the chef turned out to be something.
Exactly.
It's wild how things happen.
Yeah, so sometimes it works to your advantage where good things come out.
Well, if you're looking for it to work to your advantage, I do things people tell me I shouldn't do. First of all, you tell me I can't do something, I'm going to do it.
Yeah, I'm the same
people
way.
Tell me that, I mean, I'll find a way. But people tell me that's not going to work. It's not a resistance that I'm going to make it work. It's a on the spectrum. I can't stop. Even though I may know for a fact that this isn't going to work, especially when somebody I respect told me it wasn't going to work, but I got to follow it all the way through. And there's just so much information in there. Even when you know it's not going to work, what in here do I need to take out of here? What's valuable in this tunnel of, you know, crash where I'm going to crash? Where's the value that I can use in other areas? And that's,
mistakes.
You know.
Yeah. Mistakes or errors are always an evolving part of building as a person, as an individual, as a business, as a brand, as, you know, whatever you're doing. And all right, let's get back to the story of, so that led you up to where you're at now, right? You just dove right into dogs. And now you're fast forwarded X amount of years and here you are, right?
Yep. A couple facilities. And then,
in Arizona?
No, in LA. I left a pretty heavy footprint in LA, but, I had some, bad news along with the not being able to accept the stealing and the plagiarism. I learned that I was going to lose the use of my right arm. I have spinal accessory nerve palsy from an operation. They nicked a nerve and over the years I was, my dexterity, my timing, I couldn't keep a grip. My specialty was, you know, the worst of the worst dogs. And I was finding I couldn't do my work because I didn't know. And then the way I was told about it, wasn't, you know, gentle, and I couldn't accept it. I guess I thought I was immortal or, you know, superhuman, and that it was now you're telling me that I can't do what I'm great at. And it didn't sit well with my identity, and so I crashed. And I had already been working 7 days a week, 15-hour day. I lived in a kennel for 10 years with no kitchen, just me and the dogs. I wanted to catch up to Caesar, you know. Mm-hmm. I wanted to. And then I found out I don't want to go that far. I want to be human. Not that he's bad. It's just I love dogs a different way, and I don't want to lose that. But I went far enough down that now I can flip the switch. But when that was happening to me, I just started letting everything go, and I just pushed delete on everything in the computer and the answering machine. I pushed delete, and I had a 20-year really well-known business, and I was teaching people around the world dogs. I just started pushing delete until nobody called anymore. And that's why I moved to Arizona.
When was that? How many years ago?
I moved out here, I guess, in 2016.
Okay.
I think 2016 I moved here because when I pushed delete on everything, I was living off my savings for some time.
Yeah.
And I was running out. It's not cheap to live in California.
No.
So moving here is half the cost. So I thought, oh, I'll just move out here. Then I started to come out of the hole a little bit, you know, and did a seminar tour. But it was a very angry tour. But it was meant to be. I was utilizing my anger and frustration and put it into a scripted, not a script, but a a format to rage on to people and show them that you have to do this. Yeah. You know, it's your responsibility. You have to do it. And then after that, then I got to a point. Now I started to travel, and now I'm very happy. I have setbacks like anybody else that has these issues. But I've learned how to get out of them. I've learned to recognize them on their way. I've got multiple plans in place. Pips. See what I did there with your cat, Pip?
I was going to say, what do you
I got multiple plans in place for every level of drop in the when I start to drop. I know the signs. And so I can give myself something to do to get out quicker. And so that's one of the things, the 10 rules is going to be helpful for people. And so now that the COVID hit, I was going to be internationally known. My first overseas workshop was going to happen in Monaco, where James Bond, you know, gambles, you know. and so that got canceled. We're going to try and reschedule it, of course, so I can still be international. And now I just have the free time to start doing this, framing up the things for the online courses that I want to do.
And are these going to be? No, go ahead.
I'm sure people will see this and run with it as well. It's okay. I'm sure maybe people are doing it, but I'd like to get like 10 people. I don't know if we can even have them all at the same time, but I'd like to digitally mentor 10 people at a time and take them through like a 6 to 8 week course or 3 months by giving them homework, giving them a task, all the stuff that I believe that dog trainers are missing today, that they need, the stuff that you and I developed naturally through our mistakes, timing, range control, distance, intensity levels, angle.
Dude, I just saw that and it freaked me out. There's a thing that fell behind you.
Oh, that fell behind. I thought that was in your.
No. I saw it happening. I was like, oh, shit.
Cleo is like saying, you are not paying attention to me. What is up? This old lady is hardly ever moving around. I'll get that later, unless you liked looking at it.
No, I just was watching you talk, and all of a sudden I see this thing behind you go, woo.
I thought it was on your end because I got the headphones on. But there's like that's an awareness. Awareness is critical. It's not something you can buy and put on a shirt. Awareness is developed, and awareness is so necessary. The dexterity, the things that are put into people's reflexes now with the way pressure and release, how I've got it in quotes, is out there. That's in people's DNA, and it's going to be difficult to change that in people. So I wouldn't mind doing something like this where I give them homework, video homework. They send it to me. I show it over the course. If I could do 10 people at a time, I don't know if that's possible. I would love to be able to do that. If I have to do them 10 individually, that's cool too. But I think
you can through like through Zoom or something. You can have multiple people on the screen at once and kind of just talk like a classroom.
I know they do something like that in colleges. Yeah. You know, they have to do something.
Yeah.
I've been saying for years, even before YouTube, you know, we've got these football, baseball, triathletes, and boxing, and now MMA. All these high-level sports have been able to improve themselves through video. You know, hey, your left hand slaps the top of the water. Your right hand cuts the water where it's supposed to be. You know, so they learn. Like Lance Armstrong learned that he could shave 3 seconds off of every mile by keeping his elbows tight into his body. 3 seconds doesn't sound like that much, but there's a lot of miles in the Tour de France. And he didn't say, oh, I'll just keep him there, because his muscle memory was keep it out here. So he had to be consistently and constantly reminded and then constantly remind himself to keep it in here. And so those are the things that I want to help people change within themselves. And my school of dog psychology back in the day, they were required to say, I've got thousands of hours of student footage. And this was before technologies were matching. So they had to send me a CD or DVD. And so they could record it on the thing, and you could buy a DVD recorder, but the you know, the little thing to record onto a DVD, but the cameras weren't up to speed with the recorders. So it was hard, and they did it. They did it. And so by doing this, I think I can really help people see. Yeah. It's the same thing, me going to you at your facility and watch and showing you what you're doing, but you get to see it again and again and again, because I'll zoom that shit in, I'll slow motion it, I'll show you every. I had a student come from Jersey after he'd gone through my program, and he brought a 7-minute video, and 3 hours later, we'd made it through about 4 minutes, and there's just so much going on that you can't see with a naked eye, but you got, that's why awareness can't be put on a shirt or a hat or sold. You have to have awareness. You have to develop that.
Yeah. It's a skill set. I heard that. I heard that on a podcast a couple of days ago, where they were saying that, you know, sometimes people aren't born with certain things unless you're, you know, a 7-foot tall basketball player that, you know, you're born with that. But, you know, a lot of things that they're taught over experience. And some people do have the innate primalistic instincts to capitalize on that because they have it a little bit more than others. And so anyway, so that's I think that that's a good point. Okay, so I want to ask you a couple other questions I'd be interested to hear your feedback on. I get a lot of questions.
Is this going to end up being part one and part two? Are we going long? You tell me.
I know that we're going on a hour and change. I want to ask you probably one more question, and then we can probably.
You can ask me as much as you want. If you've got things to do.
No, it's good.
We can end it, but I have nothing to do.
Okay. Yeah, I just have an online in a little bit, but I want to go through some other stuff. But I can definitely see us doing this again. Maybe doing this in person would be cool too. I really enjoy and appreciate, and I'm grateful to be able to get your feedback from all the years of experience, because somebody like yourself who has been doing this for as long as you have and living in kennels, and you can't, like you said, you can't buy any of that. You can't teach any of that. You just have to put in the work. It's just hard, hard, hard work that a lot of people aren't willing to do. And then in the dog industry, this was my question. I get a lot of questions, direct messages, emails, so on and so forth. One of my biggest questions is, and I want you to put your spin on it, because I'm sure it's going to be great. People who are wanting to get into the dog world, wanting to get into the dog industry, and they want to train. My answer to them is usually to just tell them that dog training is a very, very, very big, wide open thing. It's a very big platform. And I tell people that, especially when, like you said earlier in the beginning of, and I wrote it down in my notes, and it was a good thing you touched on about the difference between having a dog that needs behavior modification versus obedience training, but then going to a trainer, because it says certified trainer on their thing, and they go there and they're only an obedience trainer, and you bring them a dog with behavioral issues, and what that does to the dog and the owner's confidence and things like that and the outcome. But what would be your advice to people on wanting to get into the field? Because mine is usually, find what your niche is. Find what your, what do you want to do? Behavior, obedience, dock diving, what, you know, trick training. There's so many different flavors.
So many.
So what would be your advice to people that want to get into the dog world?
Well, when I, just real quick, if you don't mind, sure. When I was teaching my school dog psychology, obviously every dog wanted to kill either a human or a dog, or didn't want to be killed. So it was an intense environment. And so my students saw, it was like an emergency room education. And I would get from my students, I don't want to work with aggressive dogs. I'm like, you don't have to. You could say, I only want to be a dog walker for spotted dogs. And that's it. And you could get that. It might take you a year, but guess what? Everybody in the world's looking at you because you have 15 spotted dogs following you.
Yeah.
You have to find what it is that you want to do and commit to that and move forward in that. There's so many areas of the dog world. You do not have to work with aggression.
Right.
And I highly recommend finding out what it is that you want first, not what you don't want.
Yeah.
But it's very, the best thing for my students was that they got the war zone education, and the ones that got it right and they didn't want to work with the aggression, they moved on properly. They had this high level understanding of this makes what they want to do even a higher skill. I had one student came to me. He was a air traffic controller, supposed to be the calmest people in the world. I loved the idea that he wanted to work with dogs. He came in, and what he specializes in now is teaching dogs to smell bed bugs.
Yeah.
You know, it's still dog psychology.
Sure.
But it's a different area. He got tired of being bitten. He wasn't meant for that. So,
and it's dog training too.
Dog training as well. You have to reinforce all of the things. So one of the things that I'm starting to do now is use food, just because learn, practice, master, begin again. I got nothing else to do. And I had to take in a rescue puppy to rehabilitate for some pennies to eat as well. Mm-hmm. And so she's fun. She's teaching me some new stuff. What I suggest anybody getting into the dog world doing is first learning what all is involved before you go and start a business. So many people are starting a business, and it's kind of a recession-proof. We don't know if it's a COVID-proof business, but it's pretty much been a recession-proof type of business, dogs. And they get these businesses full businesses. And now they want to learn how to work with dogs, and they have no time to do that. Mm-hmm. I highly recommend taking the time. It's better to become what you want than to be it, because then that's where the passion is in the becoming of it. And then learn every single thing you possibly can about that. Well, even the bad stuff. You know, when I wanted to be a screenwriter, they said the best thing you could do is read a bunch of shitty screenplays so you know how not to write.
Yeah.
And oh my God, I mean, you can see clear as day from a shitty one and a good one. So when people want to start, I first thing I would do is get a job with somebody who has a business.
Yeah.
Don't go start your own business first. That's another thing I learned in the restaurant business. Good managers were the ones that wanted their own restaurant, but they wanted to make their mistakes on someone else's dime.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, but then you run into it too, like people like you and me, we hire people because we need time to do other stuff. And so, but we have to double our time to teach these people.
Yeah.
And then once we get them taught, they want to go off and start their own thing, which is not the purpose of what we want.
Yeah.
I say stay with somebody for a good long time. If you don't like that person's not working out for you, then go to another place, learn, practice, master, begin again. But I highly recommend you'd go into three different types of businesses before you ever start your own, you know, because right now all the people that I have been following around and working with, I mean, they've got all the bullet points and all the catchphrases, but they don't have what to do with it.
Right.
They have nothing. They don't know what to do with it. So it's not about even what you know. It's about what you can do with what you know.
Yeah.
And it's critical.
Yeah. That's what I've been telling people, is just find what you want to do, find the avenue. And first, just bring into light to them that dog training is so many different categories and flavors. And people don't realize that. And I think the biggest issue with that falls under, again, the dog owner looking for help with their dog, because they'll find like I said before, a trainer, and they go there. And for me, you know, I tell people all the time, like, I don't really do obedience. I know how to do it. I can do it. But I don't, it's not my passion. It's not what fires me up.
Yeah.
I don't get
the tricks.
Yeah.
The tricks to me.
Yeah. I don't get excited about it. I think it's important. I think it's great. I think it's great relationship based, training styles. But for me, I want the dog that comes in that has worked with 6 or 7 other trainers, that has a bite history. That's what gives me goosebumps. I have videos of
me
just
too.
The hair on my arms stand up. I get so excited, and that's where I thrive. So that's the same advice I give to people, is just find out what your category is, and then go and work with somebody that's doing well in that category.
And then one added thing that I would say while you're there, you can't help but listen to what whoever you're learning from and what they're saying. I go way out of my way to make sure that they're not hearing what the human has to do to the dog, but that they understand what the dog is hearing, seeing, feeling. And it's a completely different thing than what you're projecting as a human to them. So if what you're expecting from the dog isn't happening, mm-hmm. most likely the dog doesn't understand what you expect. So you're going to get suppression, yeah. you know, or you're going to get resistance and maybe bitten. But most things that I see out there are people, the dog is supposed to do what I say. And, you know, I want the dog to cooperate with me, but until you can understand how they perceive,
yeah.
process,
yeah.
filter, and then send back information. That's why I was upset about the pressure and release, because it's just the tiniest part of the pressure matrix, which is how to communicate with. Because
yeah.
pressure is a common ground of understanding between all species. All species.
Yeah.
Rattlesnake.
Yeah.
The only reason why that rattle went is because he saw this big red heat flame coming toward him. Now, as a human, we hear that and we go, what the?
Yeah.
So auditory turns into instinctual pressure and we go away. Unless you're me, auditory pressure turns into pressure curiosity. He's like, where's that snake at?
Yeah.
I got to find that snake.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the snake bites me and he says, I didn't want to. And now I've got a whole new form of pressure. So mounting. And so I teach these dogs a baseline of how I'm going to communicate. I want them to learn what they can expect from me first. First.
Yeah.
And once you understand what you can expect from me, now we can work on what I need you to understand and what I expect from you. Because they don't have thumbs. They don't have the amygdala, right? We do. We're supposed to go down to their level of understanding.
Yeah.
But we just keep expecting them to come up to ours, and it's ridiculous.
Yeah, two things I want to add to that, interesting enough. I always, like my last session yesterday, I try to tell people, I say, now, do yourself a favor and do your dog a favor by going to the point of view of the dog. And they're like, okay. And I say, no, really. Like, pretend you're a GoPro on your dog and really walk you through the process of what you're doing. And this one particular client, leash reactivity stuff, not aggression, reactivity. So
big difference.
Yeah, huge. And I was telling her, I said, now let's go through the process. I said, you look at your dog, you ask them if they want to go for a WALK, they get excited, they get stimulated, they're aroused. You know, they're jumping up and down, they're already peeking. You grab the leash, they get more excited. You know, this is getting closer and closer. You
open anticipation.
Up, right. You open up that threshold of the door. And I tell people that's like breaking into the new world in Mortal Kombat. It's just like a whole new thing. To you, it's a door frame in your hallway, but to them, it's huge. And same thing when they go outside and then you're out and you have no control and you're sending an email and your dog is sniffing and overstimulated and all this stuff is going on and you have no connection and they see another dog and then they become very frustrated and everything just spikes to the roof and you're just about ready to send that email. And then, so I tell them to walk through that actual process of what their dog is actually going through.
Well, you can take that further because while you're trying to send that email, the dog reacts and it pulls the phone out. Now you're reacting to the dog's reaction to another dog because you're not there.
Right. And then you're
to guide the whole thing.
And then you're basically marking to the dog that other dogs are bad because your reaction is bad when your dog sees. So it's a chain
That's
reaction.
Right.
Yeah.
You attack me when there's dogs here.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the other thing I was going to say is about the rattlesnake thing. I tell people, you know, we get the email or the client that comes in and says, my dog's growling at the other dog or growling at, you know, my whatever, the kids or whatever. And I say, well, you just have to understand that you got to respect the growl. You have to, and I tell people all the time, I said, imagine if a rattlesnake didn't rattle. A lot more people.
Then you'd have a copperhead.
right. Being in Arizona, I'm sure you probably know your snakes better than I do, but. I mean, just I tell people that all the time that auditory, even like the verbiage of just an animal just saying like whoa 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 whoa, and then if you disrespect
it's an auditory form of pressure. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. And that's what I tell people. I said, that's a very clear communication, very respectful way for a dog to say, hey, whatever is going on right now, I'm very uncomfortable with, and the next step may be a bite or whatever. So anyway, it's interesting.
Well, no one's listening to me.
Right.
And so I have to change the I have to change the subject. So I tried to say something, or I tried to show you something. That didn't work. So I tried to say something. That didn't work. So now I have to do something.
Yeah.
And that seemed to work.
Yeah.
But the dog doesn't understand that it is a problem.
Yeah.
That for him, it worked. The kid was grabbed and moved away. Thank God. So why would I say anything or show anything next time? I'm just going straight to doing.
Yeah, that's
so
what gets,
we teach them.
Yeah, that's what gets me the best reaction the fastest. So I'm just going to do that from now on.
Why not? Yeah. Right? They're all about brevity.
Efficiency. Yeah, sure.
Yep.
All right, man. Yeah, I'm going to get ready for my next session, but I feel like this conversation can go on a lot
longer.
We
can do this anytime, man. I enjoy this. If you don't mind me plugging my thing, I'll throw out a website.
Yeah, tell
That's
people.
All right.
Yeah, tell people where they can find you and anything else.
Right now on Instagram, Facebook, at Lynn Boyke, LinnBoyke. I'm doing the 10 Rules to Live By educational interactive challenge. I know it's a long title, like it's a long one. But what I'm doing is I'm giving the rules. Just check it out. Go back to Superman's Kryptonite. That's where I talk about why I'm giving this away and how the challenge is going. I'm giving people something to do during this time. And there's homework, and then there's going to be a deeper education. It's coming, it's coming, it's coming, it's coming. More, more, more. So the you can also reach out if you're curious about the online work, the video education, and the site at Contact First List. Oh, interruption from Trixie. contactfirstlist@gmail.com and get on that list. Check me out. This is fun for me right now. I don't normally get into the social media much, but I'm actually enjoying this time right now. And there's I'm actually shocked at how many people are involved. I mean, I'm specific. I don't want anything in the feed because I don't want it to influence other people's answers. So I have them sending me an email, and they're sending me emails rather than just doing it right there. It's cool. Great. I'm having a good time.
That's awesome.
And then, check it out if you guys are interested.
Yeah.
School of Dog Psychology. Also, if you want to email me specifically, schoolofdogpsychology@gmail.com.
Awesome. I'll link all that stuff in the description too for people listening.
Yeah, technology.
Yeah. I'll link it in so they can write it down. And Lynn, I appreciate you coming on, man. You're a fantastic teacher. You can tell that right away. You're a great teacher, and I'm sure you would be good at teaching anything because of your teaching abilities. And I appreciate you hopping on, and we can do this again. And I hope to meet you in person someday and do some work together. That would be awesome.
Let's do it. I got some experimental ideas, I think, that might help change the dog. I was mentioning that to you on text that I don't want to share with just everybody, but I've got some interesting ideas that I think might shape
That'd be awesome.
New things in the dog world. And I think somebody like you might be better than just me trying to do it.
Yeah, man. I appreciate that. I'm very grateful for that. I appreciate that. All right, we'll pick up on this another time. I appreciate it, man. Have a good day. Stay safe.
You too. Have a great day and enjoy whatever it is. Everything, every single thing you're doing. I don't care if it's washing your hands and going, man, my hands are really dry. Just be aware of it. Just be in that second. Yeah. All right, buddy.
All right, see
Thanks
you,
for having me on, by the way.
You're
I
welcome.
Really appreciate you reaching out.
Yeah.
It means a lot.
Thank you, man. Bye-bye.
All right. Take care. Bye.
All right, guys, that's it for today. I hope you enjoyed this podcast. I know I did. What a fantastic conversation. I learned a lot. Like I said, Lynn's a fantastic teacher. I'm grateful to be able to sit down with somebody with that much experience and learn from and just have a conversation with. So thank you, Lynn, for hopping on here. If you guys haven't yet, you can follow Lynn. All of his information will be in the description below. And thank you to my friends over at Dogcha for sponsoring this podcast today. So thank you guys for listening. If you haven't yet, follow me on Instagram @TomDavis or my business @UpstateCanineAcademy as well as on YouTube. Upstate Canine Academy, and we will see you guys next time. Thank you so much. Peace.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Stop in and save big money on your next outdoor lumber project now at Menards. Menards has the largest selection of AC2 pressure-treated lumber and decking, and it's easy to load in our outdoor lumber yard. Plus, you can get free estimates fast with our deck design program in-store or on Menards.com. Check out our weekly flyer for more great deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money.